Welcome to another episode of the NREA podcast, where we look at things going on in rural education across the country. We've got an interesting episode for you today about a program in the great state of Tennessee supporting rural leaders. And we've got a guest that I think you'll find very informative and interesting, Chairman Mark White, who serves as the chairman of the House Education Committee in Tennessee, but also as the director of a leadership program with Lipscomb University here in Tennessee. So interested to hear about this and what our members can learn from it and our listeners can learn from it, maybe replicate some of the great work that's going on with this program. So got our co-host, Dr. Alan Pratt, and our producer, Dr. Chris Silver, with us today, as always. So looking forward for their input. And so I want to start off, Chairman White, give us a little background on yourself before we start diving into this program.
Well, thank you very much. And it's good to be with everyone in NREA. My early life started, I was born up in Northwest Tennessee in Obion County, Union City. And now they have the opportunity to work on educational issues for all of Tennessee. I'm very big on supporting our rural communities. My home is in Memphis. I've been there for most of my life. Father was a pastor, so we moved around a little bit when I was younger. My background is I started my career as a teacher and a principal. I taught seventh grade. Then for 25 years, I was a business owner. And then 13 years ago, I was elected to the Tennessee General Assembly. And for the past 9 years, I've been chair of the House Education Committee, which has been a very rewarding but challenging role.
Oh, I'm sure I have been involved in Tennessee education policy for about a decade now, and there's never a dull moment in that space, I can promise you.
Never.
So I'm interested to hear about this program. So I'm not sure if you're moonlighting as a representative or moonlighting as working in this program with Lipscomb. You can sort that out for us, but give us a little overview of what this program that you're helping oversee and direct from Lipscomb University.
Right. Well, they're both full-time jobs. You know, they call us a part-time legislature, but this is my 13th year, and nothing is part-time. You know, we're up here during session Monday through Thursday, and then we're out of session. We're always taking care of constituent issues, so it turns into a full-time job. About 6 years ago, I went to Lipscomb and received a master's in conflict management, which is a master's degree program they had. And I did so. I said, well, this will help me deal in committee on how do you bring and collaborate and bring people together in committee to actually get something done. And it was a very rewarding experience. Received my master's, I think it was in 2017. And then about 2.5 years ago, Lipscomb University came to me and said, we have this vision. And this vision is we want to help all of Tennessee, especially rural Tennessee, is to train leaders on how to bring people together in their communities so that that collaborative governing can happen, and so the economic development can happen, and people can work together. And if you don't work together, then it's hard to get anything done. And Tennessee is very blessed right now with so much economic development going on, so many industries coming into Tennessee, that it's very imperative that our local leaders, our mayors, our county commissioners, our chambers of commerce, anyone who has a leadership position, know how to lead in their community. So this program basically is a master's in leadership and public service. And we have a cohort of usually 20 to 25 each year. And when you graduate in a year, and it's very adult friendly, it's for adults, and it's only 4 days a month in class. A lot of master's work on the outside of that during the week. But great program on training people how to lead.
Yeah, let me follow up on that. What has been the surprise coming out of those cohorts that you've seen so far? It's kind of like, you know, we knew this was going to happen, but this has been a pleasant surprise.
You know, what's amazing, and that's the good part about my job, my state representative job, I get to go all over the state and I get to meet so many people. That's the great thing about it. And as I meet people, you know, then I can talk to them about, you know, leadership positions. And we've had several rural mayors so far. We had, you know, the Ford plant's coming down to West Tennessee. And so I have the mayor of Brownsville, Tennessee in the program this year. We've had the mayor of Benton County. And like he said, I just give you a quote. This mayor said, I cannot put into words the value of this program, the curriculum and the faculty who lead it through this program. I realize that leadership is not a set skill, but rather an evolving skill. And so our cohorts are from all the way up from Northeast Tennessee down to Southwest Tennessee and in between. We recruit and we have great industries who help, or foundations and industries that help support and scholarships where they're needed. Amazon and the Ayers Foundation and Farm Credit Mid-America, all these industries are helping us with this program.
And you mentioned collaboration a few times, and I know in my work in rural communities, that's a big deal to pull leaders together in industry and education and other organizations. And there really hasn't been anything for these rural leaders, like a county mayor that you've mentioned, or a county commissioner, or a school board member, or a city council member in a small town. And so it seems like a great opportunity for them to learn how to collaborate and create strategies for their community versus the siloed work that they may have been used to through the years.
Absolutely. And just like in my position as a state representative, I get to meet people all over the state. Well, in these classes of 20 to 25 people, you come together in a class with people all the state who are also in leadership position. And I always say some of the greatest learning comes from each other in the classroom, because you can share ideas as you're going through that. That's why the in-person part of the class, 4 days a month, is very valuable.
Yeah, I was thinking about some of the times that I've tried to pull people together, and if you haven't been exposed to some of the strategies that are out there in economic development, workforce development, how to create talent pipelines in your community, how to leverage opportunities, you know, that there's actual concrete strategies to some of that versus just getting together and meeting to meet. And so it seems like a curriculum like this that can help create those foundational skills would be really important. And even I was reading an article today about your home area, Dr. Silver, the Squatchy Valley, where they're bringing in this community and investing $1 billion in this. It's pretty elite community they're developing with a private airport. So it's really geared towards people that have planes and pilot licenses to be able to fly in and have hangars and have these really nice $500,000 homes. And it's plopping down in Bledsoe County, which if I'm not mistaken, is one of our distressed counties.
It is.
So how do you take advantage of an opportunity like that, where out of the blue, all of a sudden you're getting $1 billion investment in this very rural county? It's probably one of our most rural counties in Tennessee. So how do the community leaders come together and take advantage of an opportunity like that? And it seems like a program like this is geared towards leveraging those advantages, Chairman White.
Well, exactly. And this is one thing that I really do enjoy about this role. As I mentioned, I'm from Memphis, but, you know, love all of Tennessee, and I especially love our rural communities. Our rural communities, I always say, you know, I come from, my father was a minister and come from a faith background. And so I always believe rural communities is where you have, you know, strong faith, strong families, strong ties, where people, you know, come together. And we need those. And in the last 20, 30 plus years, you know, because of economic development in our state, when a young person graduates from high school, if they go into any form of higher education, whether it be a trade school or 4 year, a lot of times they can't go home to the rural community because the industry is not there. So the value of this program, and reason we really want to recruit our rural leaders, is so that they know how to attract industry into their areas and bring people together. And you're right, it is a skill set. It's one thing to bring people together, but you learn, why does a person react in a certain way? And they may be giving you a no, but you may not be listening well enough. And they're not really saying no, they're just trying to get across what they're trying to convey or to you. So it is, and you learn. And one thing that it taught me going through the master's program is I no longer worry about or concerned about conflict you get up in the morning, everything is conflict, everything you deal with. So you just get up and you deal with it. If someone disagrees with you, then you sit down with them, and 80% of the time you're both saying the same thing. You're just saying it in different ways. And so you got to be there long enough to understand that. And then the other 20%, you can work together and compromise, hopefully, and move forward.
Talk to us a little bit about, you know, you're going to get these cohort graduates. So is there going to be something about networking these alumni to kind of keep a network going and keep them in the loop of what's going on?
Exactly. Like I say, this is the we're in our third class now. And so, no, really our second class, our third class will start in August of 22. And so the first class, which was Chamber of Commerce people, and we got West Tennessee and East Tennessee, they formed an online email thread where they're always talking to each other and sharing ideas. They stayed very, very, very close. And so that is continuing. So that's what happens, that you've got a network of people that you can call on also. Throughout the year, when you got issues, you say, what do you think about this? You're mayor of this community, or you're this Chamber of Commerce president. And so they have each other.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, that seems like beyond the curriculum, maybe the most valuable thing they get out of this program is contacts. I mean, that is so necessary when you're trying to implement some strategies and you need support either at the state leadership level or regional economic level. And just knowing different people across the state and having access to leadership is huge for these rural communities. Cause I know when I was working in a rural school district, I had little or no contact with anybody outside our community. And I definitely didn't have contacts at the state level to try to help with anything we might want to do different, new, or get resources. So it's, that to me is maybe the most valuable part of the program.
You know, absolutely. And as I mentioned before, you know, being big on rural communities, but you know, a lot of local mayors or leaders, they're in their smaller communities. And if they don't have that resources, then what concerns me right now with all the economic development that's happening in Tennessee, just like you said, the $1 billion expansion in Bledsoe County. I want our rural communities to grow, but I want them to grow smartly. And so all that glitters is not gold. And you have all this money coming in, you have all these corporations coming in. You really need to step back and make sure that you're doing the best thing for your local community, and then that you're not getting out where it may do your community far more harm than good. Economic development is great, but let's grow smartly.
Yeah, I think that's a big important part for rural areas. And I kind of want to get two parts. I want to get your other daytime job or whatever you would call it, part-time. So How important is it for rural folks, number one, to be a part of a program, which we know that's important, but also to share their voice with our leaders in Nashville? How important is that to hear from rural communities?
Very, very important. You know, and it really came with great clarity to me the last couple of years when, you know, so many people could not come up to Nashville, or they could email and call, of course. But we need the public input for one thing, especially when we're in session. But we need people's input, because you can't make a decision in a vacuum, just like a rural leader doesn't need to be making one in a vacuum. But we also need, like I say, I've been chairing the education committee now for 9 years, and we're very fortunate to have some great people and great groups around the state that can give us advice. I use a lot of, there's an organization called SCORE in our state, which they have a lot of research that I can read and understand things. So it's just very important that we have those resources from not only the public. Let us know what you're thinking.
Yeah, I can honestly remember when I was a principal, every year when school started, we would get a one-page outline of all the new legislation that was passed that affected us at the building level, and what we would need to do to either implement something or change something. I mean, like when I remember years ago when the tobacco-free campus started, you know, when I would get those the new legislation that had been added to the Tennessee code annotated, I had no clue where it came from other than just like not this mystical place in Nashville. And every year I got a page of new bills that affect me or legislation that affect me, and had no clue about the process. And I think a lot of rural communities are the same way. They just, you know, it trickles down to them and they really haven't been a part of the process. And the ironic thing is that our rural policymakers are really the majority in the General Assembly. And that's true for a lot of states that, you know, people think the big cities carry a majority of the influence and things like that. But in a lot of states, and Dr. Pratt could probably speak to this, the rural legislators are what control the General Assemblies. And that's true for Tennessee. But the constituency really doesn't know what's going on. So I think you hit the nail on the head that you got to hear from these rural folks, and they need to be educated more on what that process looks like and is.
Yes. And like this past Wednesday, we've been in session now, I think we're in our fourth week. And yes, Wednesday was the bill filing deadline for this year. And I've looked at the report that came out. I think we've got about 250 bills just going to go through our education committee. And so trying to get your head around those as we go through committee to understand, you read, you know, and it's written by lawyers. You know, we have our own legal department. And so everything's got to be constitutional. So the bills are written legally. So you've got to get your head around that. And the biggest challenge is you start reading and you don't know exactly until you start getting into it and asking questions, how does it affect, you know, like the school system? And, you know, because there's a lot of layers on things. I've always compared the educational system to like a grandfather clock. And if you take the back off, there's all these about 20 gears. And you want to turn the one on the bottom, but you don't realize you're also turning the gear on the top. So you can change something in a bill and you can mess everything up. So you've got to go back to a lot of history and know, you know, and ask questions, you know, what are we actually doing when we pass this bill?
Yeah. I actually had a conversation this morning with someone about that very thing, about some of the bills that legislators want to pass to implement in the upcoming school year. They don't realize the fiscal note is going to be attached that to change curriculums and textbooks and things like that, versus implementing it when there's a next revision or something so that the fiscal note is, it just aligns with the timeline of implementation. So there's a lot of things like that that I think that happen in conversations in Nashville that don't realize what the actual impact is in the classroom. So that's why it's important for everyone, whether you're in rural or urban or suburban, to just know what's going on and have a voice in that process. And that's, you know, that's not isolated Tennessee. That's all rural communities across the country. And are there any comparisons, Dr. Pratt, that you've seen where that this is an issue in other states where rural communities just don't really know what's going on, but they're impacted by legislation?
I mean, I think you have it everywhere. But I think sometimes when you get more towards, you know, past the Mississippi River and especially going northwest, it's a little different because they're a little bit more rural remote than, say, we are. And we're such heavily based on county school districts for the most part. It's a little bit different, but you are right. And it takes organizations to kind of give them two or three points to share, and in a lot of our state affiliates across, I'll use Colorado as an example, you know, they give their school districts a card every legislative session, and it's got four bullet points. So when they meet with the legislator, it's going to be those four bullet points they've agreed to on, you know, on the record and moving forward. So that's a pretty good kind of setup. They do a pretty good job. Most of our states out west do similar things like that. But they're also not as dominated by metro areas as, say, more east of the Mississippi or, you know, more southeast as well.
Right. And let me ask you, just from a high level perspective, somebody that's been in this education policy world for over a decade, what do you see right now as the important things that in education policy, you don't have to get to specific bills, but just high level, what's something that we need to focus on as the state of Tennessee, but I think it, you know, there's a lot of commonalities across the country. So what are some priority areas and things that you think are important, Chairman White, in education policy right now?
Well, the two things that I'm focused on, and I think that we need to stay focused on, are both ends of the spectrum. One is the early childhood literacy, making sure that our children in pre-K or K through third grade come out of third grade, being able to read adequately so that the next 4th through 12th grade, they can you know, learn on their own. And so that is a challenge, not just in the country, but it's a challenge in our state. You know, the figures are only 1 out of 3 by the end of third grade are reading proficiently and by the end of third grade. So that's a challenge. So that's one thing we're working on. The other end of the spectrum now is because of so much economic development going on in Tennessee, we're really putting a lot of money and attention to, especially from 9th grade on, getting our young people into CTE courses so that the industries will have qualified people. We're getting ready to go down to offering and paying for dual enrollment courses in Tennessee high schools all the way down to 9th grade. So that you can literally come out of 12th grade if you have the high school that makes it put everything in place with a certificate in a particular profession where you can start earning a living and then move on to either a trade school or a two-year community college or a four-year. So those two ends of the spectrum are very, very important.
Yeah, and we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago when I ran into you in Nashville, and you had a brilliant idea. I wish I'd had the idea and I could claim it, but one of the things we're looking at in Tennessee is a weighted funding formula in education, and 40 something other states already have a formula that has a weighted system of some kind. And if our listeners don't know what that is, it's where you would invest more per pupil expenditures with certain demographics of students, like low income students or rural students or students with special needs. And you had the idea, and maybe putting you on the spot, but I think it's brilliant, that do a weighted formula for K through 3 and invest more money there, because that's such an important area. And I definitely, that's where I'm very passionate about, even in pre-K for me. But I think it's a great idea because that is so important. And we get in education all across the country, not just Tennessee, in this game of catch up, where after third grade, we're always trying to catch kids up and get them back on grade level. And it's this constant battle. And we're investing millions of dollars on the other end of the spectrum to try to remediate students, to get them on grade level, to graduate college and career ready. When if we made a bigger investment in K through 3, we could really mitigate that. So I don't know if you want to speak to that, but if you don't want to claim that idea, I'm very happy to, Chairman.
Well, since you described it that way, why don't we both take credit? That's great. No, you're absolutely right. The governor, as people may know by now, is he's put out there where we rewrite how we fund pre-K or K through 12th grade education in Tennessee. And he's put out $1 billion in addition to the 5.6, I think we currently do, in state dollars. And so, you know, we're working on that. And we will go from basically a resource funding formula to a student-centered, like as you just described, you know, whether you live in a rural community or the sparsity, you know, if you live in a community where the population is very sparse, you're going to need more money for transportation because it takes longer to the buses to get to school, for things like that. But I also want to look at how we put a heavy weight or heavy emphasis on that pre-K through third or K through third, so that if we fix that, then the child going into fourth grade, he's happy and comfortable in his reading skills. And you can pick up a science book or a history book or anything, and you can understand reading it because you have adequate reading skills. If not, you go through school, and that's why we lose so many, my belief, and drop out, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. They're just not happy with school because it's not fun, because they struggle. So we could fix that. So I've been advocating that we put a heavier weight on putting more money, maybe smaller classrooms, more teachers in your K through third grade, pre-K through third grade, and fix that. And then that solves a lot of problems down the road.
Hey, let me follow up, and I'm not putting you on the spot. There's two questions. Number one, there's a lot of states watching what's going on in Tennessee right now. And I know our subcommittee, and I know you being on the committee, are looked at a lot of different state models, probably 40-something, if I had to guess. Number one, what's the timeline for – what do you think the timeline would be to complete this review and present something to the governor?
Absolutely. And that is a challenge. Now, say from our administration, our governor, they would like to see us do something in this session, which we'll probably be here through the end of April. That is also my wish, and the reason why. Now, you know, the BEP formula was put together back in 1992, and it's been here for 30 years. So it's a heavy lift, and I always tell my colleagues, you know, they say it's a heavy lift. I'm going, but when are we going to actually do something? We can put it off to the next legislative session or the next, and because it is a heavy lift. So I'm saying, let's do everything we can to see if we cannot figure out how to change things, because ever since I've been here 13 years, and every year, especially in education, everybody has to complain about the BEP. They say, well, you're not fully funding the BEP and we need more money. So let's look at it and see if we can figure this out. But my personal opinion is that we can do it. We're going to spend an awful lot of time working on it, but it's possible.
Yeah. That's good. That's good to hear. And I know it's a top priority for you as well. I'm going to throw a different question at you, and Jared may get a little mad, but I'm going to go throw it anyway. Not really. I had a question a couple of days ago from someone in the community, and they said, hey, why can't we just use all this rainy day money just to fund education?
Well,
give us an answer on that one.
Yeah.
Well, explain what the rainy day money is first.
Yeah, sure.
For our listeners.
You know, every family should have set back so much money in savings that you don't touch for a rainy day. You never know when the roof may need repairing, or your dryer may go out, or your car may break down. So you need that pocket of money. Now, up till last year, our state budget was $42.6 billion. It's going to go up this year because we've been blessed in Tennessee. Our rainy day fund right now, if the budget passes this year, we'll go up to $1.6 billion in savings. Well, $1.6 billion, we can go through, if things turn from bad to worse in the economy, we as a state can burn that rainy day money up pretty quick. That's not a lot of money. So we want to keep adding to it every year. So my opinion is you don't use your rainy day fund. And so best thing is just balance your budget. But also it's one-time money. The biggest challenge on getting anything done in government is when you want to add money to a program, is it one-time money that you just put, you know, say $1 million in that program and that's it? Or is it recurring money, which you're going to have to come up with that $1 million every year to keep that program sustainable? So that's the challenge in government is, you know, whether it's one-time money or recurring money. You burn that I think it's right at 1.4 right now. You burn that 1.4 up, that's one-time money, and it's not there for an economic downturn.
Yeah, hold on one second. That's what I was telling this gentleman at the store. And I told him, it's like my mom used to say, that was sock drawer money that she'd put away for us to have something, you know, down the road to go on vacation. So I told him it basically, it's sock drawer money, and you leave it alone unless you need it.
Let me give you a concrete example. Every year we have legislation in education where, and we would like to do this, but we'd like to have a nurse in every school in Tennessee. Well, just to go from where we are now, one nurse for every 2,500 students, I think go down to about 1 in 600, which pretty much common test. Besides what we're already putting there, that would be another $40 million per year recurring money, which means once we pass that bill, we've got to come up that $40 million every year just for that one thing. And so, and then there's a thousand things in state government that you want to do recurring.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I know we talk about raising teacher salaries all the time, and I believe in that. I'm a firm believer in that. Just doing some napkin math, arithmetic on that, if I'm not mistaken, $1,000 raise for every teacher is about $100 million statewide. So yeah, you're right. You burn through the money pretty quick. It's not it. $1 billion just isn't what $1 billion used to be.
Yeah, sad to say, but you're right.
And the sustainability piece, I remember when we were a race to the top state, and Dr. Pratt lived this. I mean, those were the glory days. We had more money, we know what to do with. And I was on the one of the folks on the race to the top committee to decide, you know, how are we going to allocate this? And we didn't really have a sustainability plan, but you know, it was the years of plenty when we had these academic coaches, we had all these trainings. We just, you know, we were sending people all over the country for trainings and money for technology. And but after the 5 or 6 years when it was over, all of a sudden districts didn't have money for those coaches, so they just started disappearing, and all the extra money for technology to either replace it or the upkeep wasn't there. So those sustainability plans are big. So those one-time infusions are almost a blessing and a curse because of the sustainability side of it.
Absolutely. And if I just may add real quickly, and you know, one reason Tennessee is doing so well right now is because we balance our budget. You know, every bill that goes through has a fiscal note or a cost to it. We have to find the money or the bill doesn't get passed. And that may be the downside of it. But the good side is Tennessee balances its budget. We don't have really that much debt. We're the lowest tax state and the lowest debt state in the nation. And that's why a lot of industry is looking at Tennessee now, because we are the most fiscally responsible state in the nation right now. And that's something that we can really brag about.
Shoot, yeah. I thought all this industry was coming because of our podcast.
That's exactly why they're coming. I will tell you this, Chairman. I was in California this summer, and I was talking to a group, and they stopped me. And they said, "Hey, you ever heard of a little place in Tennessee called Jasper Highlands?" And it's where I live, obviously. There's a mass group of people moving from the West, moving from the Northeast to our state. I mean, it's, and you know, seeing Nashville, but it's everywhere. And that's a good and a bad thing, but you're right. People do notice Tennessee.
They do. And I'm on a lot of education conferences and committees around the state, Southern Regional Education Board out of Atlanta and a lot of things. And anytime you go to these, the conversation goes, well, look what Tennessee's doing. You know, one thing good about Tennessee, we've been so under both parties, we've been so financially well run, is that we don't have the bureaucracy that gets in our way. We have bureaucracy, but we don't have what a lot of other states have. It gets in the way to help us make change. You know, we can make change easier than a lot of states.
Yeah. And there's something I want to get your opinion on. We've got two final questions here to wrap up. And one of them is from a national perspective, and something that NREA has been passionate about for a while is, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's no Office of Rural Education in the federal Department of Ed. There's only been liaisons, and I'll say the liaisons we've had in the past have done the best they could, done a great job within the capacity they had, but there's no team of people that wake up every morning focusing on rural ed and supporting rural communities and education across the country. What are your thoughts on, you know, should there be an office in the federal government that focuses on rural ed and all the difference in how it's different all across the country between farmlands and swamplands and mountains and all these, and plains and all these different communities, versus just a liaison position?
You know, good question. Sitting here thinking about it as you asked, of course, I'm not real big. You know, there's a lot of federal programs, and but they make a lot of decisions behind a desk, and they don't really, as long as they get out into the rural communities and they have the liaisons that they listen to. But if they make decisions behind a desk in D.C., I'm always not real big on that. The best thing they can do is listen to the states. You know, Tennessee is a very rural state. You know, we have Memphis, Nashville, Knoxville, Chattanooga, Kingsport, that area is our bigger cities. But we're mostly rural, and that's a good thing. I just think strength comes from rural. and we need good rural leadership, but they also need good representation. But that's what I'm big on, is I really want to protect our rural communities, and I really want them to grow. I love the economic development coming to Tennessee, but I want us to be very wise in that we have strong leaders. Going back to our Lipscomb University leadership program, I want us to have strong leaders across state who know how to manage the growth. Because in 10 years from now, I want us to look back and say, wow, we brought a lot of industry in. We've had a lot of growth of people coming from other states. And I just hope we manage it well. And it's going to take great leadership to do that.
Yeah, I agree on the somebody not sitting behind the desk and actually getting out in the communities. And I think that's one thing we've been proponents of, is there's only so much that one or two liaisons can actually do in listening right across the country, only so much capacity they have. So it's that's the purpose of our advocacy, is to get a bigger voice in the overall federal plans and resources that are allocated. And I'm going to end. It's been a great episode. Appreciate you joining us. And we've covered a lot of topics. We talked about Tennessee a lot, but it's obviously these rural issues apply to many communities across the country. So we appreciate your take on the political side and as well as describing this leadership program. But I want to end on our final question we give every guest. And so you've got grandkids, correct?
I do.
So you between your kids and grandkids, you probably know about Harry Potter. And so if you were Harry Potter for one day and you had Harry Potter's wand, and you could wave that wand to change something in education, and you can't wave it to get more waves, it's not like the genie where you wish for more wishes, you got to wave that wand one time, what would you do to change something in education or support something in education?
Well, mine, I would thank you for that and appreciate this opportunity. Mine, if I had that magic wand, I would go back to the very beginning. I would wish and pray that every child come from a stable home that gives them a chance when they start school so they're ready to learn. Too many of our children do not have that. And that's, we're trying to solve problems that on the state level in education that we shouldn't have to be solving. I wish every child would come from a good, stable home.
I'll tell you, Chairman, that was pretty close to the same answer that our Teacher of the Year from Nebraska gave. Pretty similar. And that's a good one. Kind of restarting. So that, thank you. I appreciate that answer.
Yeah. Man, we got sentimental here at the end. You know, we're talking education policy, and Chairman White went straight to the sentimental, let's help the homes.
Well, if I make a selfish plug to, I wrote a book about 10 years ago about May I Call You Dad, the reason that we need good fathers in every home. You have a strong father and good parents and give a good foundation to a child. Once they hit school, they can take off.
Yeah, no, there's no selfish plugs here. We promote ourselves all the time, so we're happy for our guests to promote themselves as well, Chairman.
Heck yeah.
Well, we appreciate everyone joining us for this episode. It's been very interesting. We covered a lot of different things, but it was all applicable to rural communities. Thank you, Chairman White, for joining us, and looking forward to seeing what comes out of this legislative session. It's always fast and furious. We've got that short window in Tennessee, and what's Texas legislative session? It's 100 days every 2 years, or what is it, Pratt?
I think so.
Say that they'd rather have 2 days every 100 years. So
I would agree.
So. But we're looking forward to seeing what comes out of this, and also keeping track of your program. Love to have you back, you know, in a year or so, just to see what's going on with the program. And I know currently it's for Tennessee residents, but you know, this thing may expand outside the state for other rural communities with the virtual aspects and tools we got now. So I think it's going to be a great program. Join us next time for our upcoming episode of NREA, what's going on in education. Also, a shout out to our sponsors, Win Learning, that sponsors our podcast, Tennessee-based company, and does a great job in supporting K-12 education. So we appreciate Win Learning and sponsoring the podcast. Look forward to talking with everyone on our next episode. Stay tuned.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast and website are those of Dr. Alan Pratt, Dr. Jared Bingham, and Dr. Christopher F. Silver, and do not represent the affiliated universities and or any organization affiliated with the hosts. This podcast and the accompanying material, including our website, represent the opinions of Dr. Alan Pratt, Dr. Jared Bingham, and Dr. Christopher F. Silver, and their guests to the show and website. The content here should not be taken as medical or professional advice and should be used at your own risk. The content here is for informational purposes only and should be understood as such. The Rural Voice podcast or its hosts do not endorse, approve, recommend, or certify any information, product, process, service, or organization presented or mentioned in this podcast, and the information from this podcast should not be referenced in any way to imply such approval or endorsement. Further, the content of this podcast are the property of the National Rural Education Association and are protected under U.S. and international copyright and trademark law. No other use, including without limitation, reproduction, retransmission, or editing of this podcast may be made without prior written permission. By listening to this podcast, you agree to the terms and conditions, and while we make every effort to ensure that the information that we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or corrections of errors. Thank you.